This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back to Belmont. Also back is whatever this contraption. I thought that after yesterday, that the whatever this VacCon thing is, that it would have been a one-time only event. But the machine is back. They moved up the stretch, in a little bit. So hang in there. Not much longer. And later we'll talk to Andy and we'll have Seth. But right now, always a fun conversation. Belmont Week, because of the unique situation of the 12 furlongs, and particularly today's conversation with Sid, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. It's particularly going to be interesting because I'm going to throw Sid the curveball that Andy Beyer presented to open the show with Andy, somebody you would expect as traditional as a traditionalist could be. And he's calling for a change in the Triple Crown. Sid, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. We're dealing with some ambient difficulties, noise-wise, but I'll mute the mic each time I send it to you. Were you able to hear Andy in hour one?
No, I was listening to Ron. I came in the enjoyable conversation with Ron Anderson. That was good, but I didn't hear Andy. What did he say?
He says the Triple Crown has to be changed, period. End of story, no discussion. Push it back later in the year, spread the racing, the timing between the races, that this is an imperative given the, you know, the conditions that surround the game, and that it's an opportunity the industry should embrace, as opposed to you know being hesitant about.
I respect his opinions. Everybody has one. I don't really have. I like the way it is, but if people want to change something, go ahead. But I don't really have a problem with it because, people were complaining there weren't any Triple Crown winners, and then we had two, and now I don't know the impetus of why he wants to do this, but I suspect is it because of not getting drug tests back in time, and therefore is that?
No, not at all. He thinks the quality and the participation levels. He just says, the Preakness suffers from, the proximity, the 2-week turnaround, and the last literally since Bobby Frankel with Empire Maker that kind of changed the thinking and the approach. And So, he said all you got to do is look at last year's Preakness with Swiss Skydiver and Authentic 4 weeks after the Derby. He said you couldn't have had a better race. And, he thinks that even the, first Saturday in May plays against the crop, against the sophomores. We talked about the point system and some of the unintended consequences that have arisen from it. There's a lot of moving parts to this, obviously, including the way the winter schedule feeds into the Spring Classic Trail. But if you did keep the Derby, I invoked the first Saturday in May being sacrosanct. If you kept it there, you could make an argument for. A first Saturday in May, first Saturday in June, first Saturday in July, and you would, all three races would benefit. And Andy says he doesn't see a reason that the mile and a half has to be maintained for the Belmont.
I mean, I don't have a problem if, you know, tracks want to change it. You know, I'm not a dyed-in-the-wool traditionalist, but, you know, change is always good. But I don't, you know, if it's just because of participation levels, I mean, you know, you weigh that against what these races were meant to be, which is to test racehorses and try to come up with the best, you know, horses that can compress in modern times anyway, you know, three races within a 5-week period to, you know, test the individual. You know, there's so many different ways to look at it, Steve. You know, there's some guys looking at it from a participation level. There's other guys looking at it from, you know, the way it's set up to, you know, really test these horses. And you know, but change, you know, things change too. I mean, you know, in baseball, you went from 4-man rotations and starters going deep, you know, 300 innings guys to specialized setup men, relievers, short relievers, you know, the closer. So, you know, things do change. So, you know, it's really up to people to society changes. I mean, we've gone, we just last week we were talking about the way, you know, horses are viewed now, you know, and animal welfare. You know, so, you know, changes do come, societal changes do come, and you know, change is necessary. And I guess the only way I can really put it to you is I'm not a person that, you know, is heavy one way or another. And I was talking to Sue Finley this morning, for example, about whip usage. And I said, you know, at Monmouth, and I said, you know, obviously I don't like to see a horse get beaten up. And at the same time, you know, I don't really like no whips. What about not raising the hand? You know, some type of compromise situation, you know, instead of going from one, veering from one extreme to the other. And, you know, like you said, the May 1st, 4 weeks, June, another, yeah, that's off the top of my head. That doesn't sound bad. I like the mile and a half of the Belmont, though. But then, you know, that's a personal thing. You know, Andy might not like it. I don't know why, but I wish there were more mile and a half races.
Well, and I can't argue with that. And certainly as, oh, my God, I'm sorry, Sid. I'm sitting here, and the hawk, the hawk that lives up on the roof,
yeah,
that flies from the roof to the infield constantly, he just dove into the lake for a fish. That was unbelievable. He came up empty, but it's like Wild Kingdom here. And now he's circling again. This is the funniest thing. This is now he's going up. Looks like he's going to land on the flagpole. This is hysterical. I saw the big splash go up, but when he came out of the water, he didn't have a fish in his beak.
Oh yeah, those old Wild Kingdom videos when they go into that water and they got the fish on the talon. It's like you can't take your eyes. You can't avert your eyes. You know.
And I'm sure over the years you've been up on that up in the crow's nest offices there,
yeah,
where Equibase and the, you know, the chart callers have been and so forth, where mm-hmm. they work from. There's one office, and I've done the show from up there actually at times. And if there's any more noise, I'm going to go do it again from up there. The hawk has a nest literally by one of those windows, and Mig, I think Mig had that office for a little bit. And the, you know, the hawk will come up and you know, sit, you know, right on the nest. It's hysterical. We have a pair of them actually at Saratoga too, and when I used to work in the, doing the barbecue in the mornings before people were on the track, the two of them would be like flying and sometimes chasing squirrels or chipmunks through the backyard. It was the craziest thing.
Wow, that's great viewing.
Yeah, it's
that
really neat.
That's great viewing. And it's so great that you can riff on that on your show.
I threw this thing at you. This is like a knuckle curve. How do you think the breeders and talk about, you know, you're about to launch into an analysis of these pedigrees for the mile and a half, and you know, honestly, Sid, if I look at the recent winners, it's kind of a mixed bag. I mean, if you go back to, let's say, since about 2010 or so, the last 12, 14 years, maybe. I mean, obviously, yeah. American Pharoah was going to get every chance. But let's see, Tonalist, Palace Malice, Union Rags, you know, those are all serviceable. Ruler on Ice, Drosselmeyer, Summerbird was sent abroad and then died, so he mm-hmm. didn't really, that's unfair. Fleet Alex had a useful career. Birdstone, Empire Maker, we've talked about him historically. You know, more recently, Creator got sold, right? Creator was exported.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Japan. Yeah.
Taprit, and then Justify.
He doesn't have horses. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, Justify and Sir Winston and Tis the Law.
Yeah, I mean, and Tis the Law is a mile and a quarter. Tis the Law is Belmont.
Mile and an eighth.
A mile and an eighth. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mile and an eighth. Yeah. So there's, you know, there's a distance change right there for it. You know, and historically, and I'm sure Jennifer Kelly can see us, you know, tell you about it, but, there were some mile and 3/8 or mile and 5/8 before, you know, years ago. But, I mean, in the modern era, talking about a mile and a half is what it's been. And, you know, the trend has actually been, even though that race has stayed, other races have gone by the wayside. And that's something I lament, the fact that distance racing has slowly, deteriorated. And so in that light, it seems like it's an anomaly because it's the only race on dirt for three-year-olds at a mile and a half in this country. That doesn't, you know, but it's still, you know, it's still the test of that type of champion, isn't it? And, you know, it's a great race to have. And, I mean, I remember, you know, when the Jockey Club Gold Cup was, 2 miles, and you do too, you know, and Four Go used to win that race. So I think we've seen a trend towards more distance on turf as turf has proliferated. And I'd like to see, if anything, I'd like to see, you know, more opportunities for horses at those distances. I think it's easier on horses too. And especially since, you know, people are going away, no Lasix and stuff like that. You know, you don't have shorter races. You have to run harder on dirt. One of those things that, you know, you're gonna pop vessels. But I think, you know, if we had a better balance in our racing program, instead of everything at a mile and a 16th or less, you know, throwing the mile and a quarter races, you know, I think that diversity is great. And I think overall, you know, it gives these horses that win the Belmont a chance too. You know, this Tonalist you just mentioned, obviously he had the Hollywood Gold Cup winner. The other day, right? Country
yes.
Grammar.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, so I would actually argue to keep the distance and to increase some distances of dirt races.
You know, this is something, the things are piling up for me to talk to Rick Hammerly about the end of the week. Because scheduling of stake races in circuits came up as well with Ron Anderson today, but we've talked about that topic, Sid, and the Breeders' Cup, they made a conscious effort. And obviously the success story we always talk about is the juvenile turf events that then triggered the association of not so much creation of new races, but the races that were available preceding the Breeders' Cup for two-year-olds on grass. They absolutely benefited and became more pronounced.
Yeah.
They tried to do something with the Breeders' Cup Marathon, and there were, again, there were races like the Brooklyn and the Greenwood Cup at Parks that were in place that could be utilized as preps, but that didn't really take to the same degree.
But there's been, too quick, I think.
Yeah, and they didn't stick with it long enough, and the you know, there's been initiatives on this topic before, and you know, to try to do what you just described, balance out the calendar or the, you know, the assortment of races available. You know, there's always, all you have to do is look here at Belmont, all these mile and a quarter turf maiden special weights for horses.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I liked it when there was, people won't remember this, but it used to be called the Handicap Triple Crown. Met mile at the mile, and then the Suburban, a mile and a quarter, Brooklyn, mile and a half. Gives a good program for older horses, you know? And people started getting away from that, you know, as younger people and executives, you know, poo-pooed the idea of handicap racing and whatnot. But I think the idea of a longer, you know, program in place throughout the year, and then if you go ahead and put a marathon race at the Breeders' Cup, it makes much more sense. They just went ahead and suddenly stuck a marathon up there, and, you know, you don't have quality of horses to fill it and to garner interest. So, excuse me. I think with the trend towards, you know, the turf races going up in distance and more opportunities, why not have a better balanced racing program for, you know, the population? I think overall that just benefits the breed, owners, trainers, fans, you know, I think it's just a much more worthwhile program for racing, and it kind of brings it into line with, even, you know, talking about Europe and stuff, you know, that's one thing I really love about Europe. You got 5 furlong sprint specialists, and if they have to go 6 furlongs, they wonder if they'll stay the extra age, you know, and then you got your mile events. A mile and a quarter is, a mile and a half is, you know, you got the Epsom Derby and the Oaks at a mile and a half. Most derbies are a mile and a half, except the French, which is, you know, 2,000 meters. And then they have a St. Ledger. And, of course, they talk about the St. Ledger. There is a relic. Even there, they're talking about the mile and three quarters. But you still have, you know, Cup horses and horses like Stradivarius, who's making a name, running till he's 7 or 8, and all these, you know, two-mile plus races, Ascot Gold Cup. So I think, you know, in general, even though they lament in Europe where they have a lot of stamina that everything's going towards speed, I think we have the opportunity here, you know, we've done right to at least build some of our races up. I like the fact that the Louisiana Derby, they made it a mile and a 3/16.
That's right.
You know, and that was you know, it's like the first time I can recall, even as long as I've been following racing, that, you know, you have a big race that's that close to, in distance to the Derby.
We're going to talk about the Belmont with Sid, and as we transition into that conversation, since you mentioned the Handicap Triple Crown, got to throw in the last Handicap Triple Crown winner, the great Fit to Fight, for Mac Miller and Mr. Mellon, and of course the foundation sire at Lane's End, Fit to Fight. There you go.
Yeah, and, you know, and my, you know, I always say there's, I got three things that give me goosebumps. One is when I wake up in the morning, light up a cigarette, and listen to Jimi Hendrix's version of Dylan's All Along the Watchtower, and there's great guitar solo. I never fail, still gives it. The other is, you know, watching Four go every year in those handicap Triple Crown races, gutting it out sometimes at 138 pounds like he did in the Brooklyn one year, I think, or 137. And, third one, a personal one. My son Joe went 3-for-4 against number one ranked Florida. But horse racing is part of that lore for me, and, you know, that handicap Triple Crown definitely is something they should really think about kind of popping back up again.
I'm all for it, believe me. And I also invoked the Triple T era conversation with Ron earlier, too.
Exactly.
I'm for any of those things. I want a summer Triple Crown of the Haskell Travers and Pennsylvania Derby. I mean, there's so many things that we could craft. Let's take our look here. Got about 10 minutes, Sid, and dive into this field of eight for the Belmont. And there are some pedigrees that scream 12 furlongs in here, and it might not necessarily be among the favorites.
Yeah, and you know, this is a funny race for me personally. I think the Kentucky Derby is a better test of stamina than the Belmont, even though the Belmont is 12 furlongs, because, and I suppose one of the things that always strikes me was, you know, I was like 16 maybe when Paul Forbes won Wire to Wire for Laz Barrera. You know, he'd won the Derby, and Laz would just gallop this horse 2 miles every day to bring him up to the Belmont, and it just seemed so implausible that he could do it. And he did. Got nursed on the front end, Angel Cordero, and won the race. And it just, you know, just made me realize that these horses, sometimes that trip when you're getting pretty easier internal fractions is enough to overcome, you know, pedigree or whatever. And so a speed horse, you know, so you look at a horse like, you know, maybe Rock Your World, and you think that, you know, he might have a shot in this race on that type of basis. At the same time, you look at some sires that have done really well. And, of course, the horse that screams to you is Tappet. I think, what, he's got 3 Belmont Stakes winners. And this colt, champion 2-year-old, you know, obviously is high quality, you know, better horse than a Creator was at this stage, won it. And, you know, there's a way to look at pedigree, too, with some sires that have had success in the races. Curlin, another one. And I think, you know, 6-1 morning line on Known Agenda, I think that's, you know, considering some of these other prices are going to be shorter, I think that's a great play, too. You know, Curlin's already had a Belmont Stakes win. He always seems to have horses in the Triple Crown races, which means, i.e., these horses are classic horses. You know, they love that mile and a quarter to mile and a half range when given the opportunity. So, you know, based on that, I think Known Agenda, you know, Florida Derby winner, I'm kind of leaning to him, to tell you the truth.
Interesting. And from the dam side, that Byrama, who was a stake winner herself by Byron, and
yeah.
If we're going to talk about Curlin on top, I keep, there's also a Curlin mare involved here. France Godina is out of a Curlin mare.
Yeah.
But
right.
Overtook, to me it seems like Overtook is you know, now with Regal's Ransom having to demur, overtook out of the AP Indy mare, got lucky by curling. I thought that
he's got
that stamina look, right? And he's got that one-paced running style that plays well here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you want some solid, consistent tractions throughout. You don't want to be too far back, it seems to me, but, you know, sometimes we always get these promising horses that look like, oh, what, wait till the Belmont for them, you know, and either they go too early and take away their punch, or they're outpaced early and can't make it up. So it's funny about those types of horses. So sometimes maybe if a horse has too much stamina, quote unquote, from what you see in a pedigree, maybe it's not the right horse. You know, even though it says, you know, 12 furlongs and wow, this horse is curling out of an AP Indy mare, tons of stamina. You know, like I said with my Bull Forbes lesson, it just seems that at this stage of the game, and the way I view it with the Derby, I think is more a test of stamina than this race. I think you just have to have have a good combination of speed and stamina. You know, obviously, and I'm not saying anything new there, but I kind of like to see a horse that has a little more speed, to tell you the truth, and so.
Cruising, you know, kind of like a cruising speed scenario, and really, Known Agenda really never had seemingly a chance to run in the Derby, you know, from the poor early positioning, and funny, I have not heard him. I got to be honest, I have not heard much discussion of him coming into this week.
I haven't either. Surprisingly,
right?
I've not heard anybody really mention this.
No.
You know, obviously, he's well, you know, 6-1 is, you know, it's not a 30-1 here, obviously. So that's going to be interesting. I mean, wonder what Todd Fletcher thinks.
He's throwing all three in here, and was even considering, also had the Peter Pan winner, who is targeting. What's he targeting? He's targeting Jersey? I forget what he's targeting. But Bourbonic down inside, the Bernardini out of the Fleet Alex mare. Ron Bauer, we've discussed extensively. Hot Rod Charlie, Oxbow out of an Indian Charlie mare. Feels a little bit, I don't know. I don't know if he wants every bit of 12. But, you know, certainly Doug O'Neill thinks he fits. We talked Known Agenda. There's quality to this group, and you know, especially it would have certainly been nice to have had Rock Your World, Known Agenda, Hot Rod Charlie, Mandaloon, Midnight Bourbon. It would have been nice that, and this was the point I think Andy Beyer was stressing this morning.
Yeah,
it would have been nice that to have had more of these. You know, obviously it's impossible to say all of them, but it would have been nice to have had, you know, them spin out of Derby and go to Baltimore, and you know, there it would be that much more intriguing. You know, and a crescendo. I mean, which is what we kind of all hope for when we get here. You know, that there's something of a. You know, if it was an orchestral piece, that there would be a rousing finish.
not an orchestral maneuver in the dark.
But a bump, OMD!
Yeah.
Look at you.
Yeah.
Sid, I love it, and I'm glad we connected. Are you still in Florida, or are you back?
Yeah, no, you know, I've gone back and forth, but I'm back here in Florida right now,
right.
Away from your rain. Yeah.
Well, the rain. Yeah, I think the rain's behind us. There's a little bit tomorrow, but then we're gonna have a beautiful Friday and Saturday. It's gonna be all right.
Excellent.
Sid, I appreciate it, and we'll do some recap in Triple Crown season in the books when we talk next week.
Absolutely, Steve. Thanks again, and have a great weekend, and have a good, successful betting day.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we're looking for. That's the focus from now till noon on Friday. And, in fact, Andy Serling is going to join us here next, and we'll get some opinions from Andy.
All right.
Sid, I appreciate it. Talk next week.
You got it. Bye.
Sid Fernando, everybody. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale and Work Thoroughbred Consultants. Season, breeding season, obviously, coming to a close. I think most everybody put their last foal up, right, the last week or 10 days. I've seen the last couple of pictures, you know, of farms saying last mare, last foal of the year. So. Get into the summer portion. Give those stallions, except for the ones that have to shuttle, give the stallions some time off and let the mares incubate. And I hope your mares all are in foal, are pronounced in foal. Right. We're going to talk to Andy, and he joins us now. Andy Serling, good morning.
Steve, I can barely hear you.
All right, I'll leave that to Casey. Case, can you?
Now I hear you better.
There you go, beautiful. Yeah, thank goodness you weren't scheduled an hour ago when there was heavy equipment here and there was water cascading down from the boxes. it was a cacophony here. Andy, that card that came together yesterday, and it was really gratifying to see.
Is the old one out yet?
Yes. Yeah, it came out. Just came out. People are really excited. I'm pleased at the reception, in fact, that Saturday's card is getting
You're
from people.
You're pleased, Steve. I'm pleased.
Exactly.
I wait to hear where you stand on it. And if you come back pleased, then I'm pleased. That's really all that matters.
Beyond the feature, beyond the Belmont, there are so many terrific races, not just Saturday. I mean, Friday's card's fun too, but Saturday obviously will be the focus.
Is Martin sitting there or something? Is there something going on here I don't know about? Are you...
He's taking me to lunch. He said if I lauded him in the racing office enough
I don't know if you lauded him and him in the racing office enough. He promised not to have lunch with you.
Oh, zing! Oh, you're the best. Where do you want to start on this absolute banquet of racing?
You know, you've already misused a word on the show. In
which
your
one?
Attempt to use big words. You misused cacophony.
Really?
So, yeah.
How?
Yeah, it's not a noun. Anyway.
Can I say? Okay. Then I
sort of English language, and then you'll be fine. I don't know, Steve. What are we discussing here?
You tell me. What
is the handicapping segment?
Yes, a little bit.
I don't want to deter people from watching The Brilliance of Talking Horses by having a handicapping segment. But what do you want to discuss?
What race beyond the Belmont? I mean, we'll get to the Belmont, but what race beyond it grabs you the most?
On Saturday?
Yeah.
Well, I haven't finished my picks, but
well, you have to pick.
I'm mostly finished. It's hard because it's very hard to discuss who I'm really most interested in, especially 3 days before the race, but, you know, it's because so much depends on what prices they are. I mean, I'm very interested in betting Cotto River and the Woody Stevens. Obviously, Jackie's Warrior is the worst to beat, but I thought Cotto River had a chance to win that race, and I thought he'd probably be around 4-1. I like Aja Weed in the Brooklyn over Tiz and Magician. You know, I thought that Search Results was the worst to beat in the Acorn over Day Out of the Office. I'll tell you what's amazing. The Jiper has absolutely no speed in it. How do you have a grade one turf sprint?
It's weird.
No speed?
Yep.
Is that like the final, this is where racing has gotten to, that there's absolutely no speed horses? So Bound for Nowhere is going to be favored. It's extraordinarily hard to beat in that race. I thought Stubbins would run a little bit better. He's coming off a long layup for Doug O'Neill, but that was dangerous. Out of the Fits is a really good race. I mean, to have Swiss Skydiver squaring off against Latruska and She Dares the Devil, as well as Valiant, who really was turning her career around the dirt last year, that came up a very, very strong race. So that's actually the race you could have hoped for, right? I mean, Monomoy Girl's obviously Michelle, so without her in training, I'm not really sure who we're missing from here, you know? So this is a very strong race. I'm hopeful that Swiss Skydiver will bounce back. But listen, any of those horses can win. The Just a Game came up a big field. Obviously, Sweet By and By and Regal Glory, I think, are entering case. They forced the Intercontinental off the turf tomorrow with some rain expected. Tama here in Pocket Square. Chad Brown has a very strong hand in that race, even with Blowout as well. I mean, Nick's Go's going to be very tough to beat. The Med, obviously, Mischievous Alice, last race was terrific and can beat him. The others, you know, I know it's a small field, but there are solid players in there with Dr. Post and Silver State. Even by my standards, I don't think it's impossible. The Manhattan, I'll tell you what's interesting about the Manhattan. You know, I texted Christophe Clement, and I said to him, the silver linings department, I guess you could say that if Gufo wins the Manhattan, you were lucky you lost the Man of War, because you lost the Man of War, he gets a tremendous weight break. And I'm not a big weight guy, but he does get 6 pounds from other major players here. And it's because he hasn't won a grade one, I guess, or whatever. He hasn't, whatever, I didn't look at the conditions, but I'm sure it's related to that. And had he won, like, because he gave 6 pounds to Channel Cat last time, and now he's getting 4 pounds from Channel Cat.
Right.
So, you know, that's a 10-pound switch on him. And at some point in these distance races, there, even if you're me and you don't believe in weight, it's, it matters. And then there's the Belmont. I'll be doing my video tomorrow, but I'm not telling people on your show who I like, because they have to watch the video. I need all those hits. I even think the last two races, the 12th and 13th, are interesting. I don't have picks in the 13th. I thought Spongy would be tough in the 12th. But no, it's a fun car. It's a fun weekend of racing, you know, Friday as well, and tomorrow. Fortunately, this, you know, the curse of the rain that we never got suddenly is dropped upon us, but you do the best you can.
No, we certainly, from a forecast standpoint, we're in better shape than we were days ago, where it looked like it was going to press beyond Thursday. Right now, we're going to have a beautiful, beautiful Saturday. I mean, that that seems guaranteed at this point. And we'll deal with whatever else comes. I'm glad you talked about the Jaipur too. You know, there was a chance that Bound for Nowhere wasn't going to enter.
Ward doesn't like to run his horses more than twice a year, right?
He's selective. He's selective.
It's a little ridiculous, to be honest with you. What's Kamari waiting for? Race at Turfway in the winter?
I've not seen her discussed.
She's in bubble wrap somewhere in a storage facility.
An undisclosed location, as the saying. Let me see about. I'm just curious. Let me see what she. Well, she just worked. She just worked the other day, end of the
she's
week.
Rewrapped since then.
She actually, Andy. She's got two works since the Madison. She was off. She was off about
the Madison was 2 months ago.
I know, and she was off a month with. She went about 5 weeks without a work.
She's probably working the party circuit.
she went 5 furlongs the other day in 1:04, and so she's got 2 back-to-back work. So she's obviously starting to gear back up for something.
Gearing up for Keeneland next year.
Give us since you probably are done with Friday. What about the True North, Andy? Firenze Fire, can people are going to start that pick six, the 2-day pick six? Can they really lean on Firenze?
It looks like the horse to beat to me. I don't know. I've been told the only way to hit multi-race bets, you have to have at least 4 singles. N minus 2 singles. Can't play. So I'm revamping my betting style based on 20-year-old kids on the internet who are great, successful gamblers. I mean, it looks like the horse to beat is in that race. I thought Fat Man could win. I thought Looking in a Bikini had a chance, but I think if you're leaning on somebody, you probably lean on him. What's the next leg of the trip, that pick six?
You then jump to the New York with that big, bulky field.
And who do you like there, Steve?
I thought that Magic Attitude and Harvey's Little Goyal Thundering Knights felt like the three that...
No Micheline for you?
I don't know. I'm ambivalent.
Yeah, I like Thundering Knights and Harvey's Little Goyal.
You love Harvey's Little Goyal. Who are you kidding? She's one of your favorite horses in training.
Yeah. Thundering Knights last race was extremely good. If she runs that race, I think she'll win this race. And another race in it is the Belmont Gold Cup, I assume?
Yes. We got a very stern push from Ron Anderson on trying to narrow this down for those that are building those tickets.
Ron is handicapping service now?
Ron's had a handicapping session with me every year for years on Belmont Week.
Ron likes Baron Samedi at 8 to 5 morning line?
He does like Baron Samedi, and he likes Ziad, the Grand Motion with Manny.
He likes who?
Ziad.
Last time, but I guess they were tougher horses. They're the two horses to beat. I mean, that's fairly obvious. Baron Samedi won 6 races in a row. Excuse me, his last race was a real step forward for him. He ran well in there. You know, the favorite was Santiago in the last race, who actually had won the Irish Derby last year, but he really didn't run that well. It was an odd race. I mean, a horse did throw a lot at the start and sort of running out in front, but I don't think it really affected anybody. If anything, it might affect Baron Samedi, though it didn't seem like the rider had an issue riding him. Yeah, he's way the horse to be. I thought that Fantasioso
mm-hmm.
a little bit interesting if you're looking for a price in there.
Yep. For Nacho.
There's nothing wrong. Baron Samedi's way the horse to be. Zaya gets class relief, but I'll tell you something, Grant's usually pretty good off layoffs, but he was bad last time.
We'll see if we can't find any details.
It's an easier spot, but he was bad last time. That worries me a little.
And you know, in terms of nibblers, the two maker horses, that Tie to the Sea and Journey to Freedom, had like a little outside kind of feel to them. Just a little.
I didn't
you know, like C kind of a thing. Those are the three Friday races that lead into Saturday, and then Saturday's pick six races are the Jiper, the Met, and the Belmont, and as Andy said, he's going to save his Belmont reveal for the video presentations. And
I don't think there's anything overly. I mean, I think the Belmont's sort of an obvious race, right? I don't. If there's something clever in there, I certainly don't see it. I understand that Rock Your World has a stand. They think, you know, you can totally throw out his Derby, and maybe that's fair. I didn't like him in the Derby, so I'm not sure why I'm really supposed to like him here.
Interesting.
He is the speed, but I don't know. I mean, I know it, you know, his race was over at the start of the Derby, but wouldn't it be nice if he ran one step at some point during the race?
So,
and as far as Known Agenda, the only reason that I consider Known Agenda even remotely is because Todd Fletcher has done so well in Belmont Stakes. But the reality is that, you know, Radcliffe is a very good horse, and Alice Malice was the speed in the Derby, and all the horses that showed speed came back and were effective. And Tappert was in a very, very weak Belmont. But on the other hand, he never ran a competitive race again. So Todd really does have the ability to get him to run their peak races. Commissioner outran his odds. You know, I mean,
yeah.
Todd understands the horse of Belmont and gets the horse the right way. The problem with him, Jenna, I don't think he's very good. I know that there's a narrative out there that he had a tough trip in the Derby. It's one I completely and totally disagree with. I don't believe he was shuffled out at any point. I believe he was too slow to keep up, and so he basically shuffled himself out. And he'll run better, but I just don't know if he's really good enough. And I mean, I respect Ron Bauer, and if he's just a new horse based on the Preakness, then he might be the horse to beat. I'm just not sure I want to trust him off just one race, but he can absolutely win. As in Hot Rod Charlie. But Hot Rod Charlie's got a huge fan base. I think he's going to be pretty short in here. And I'm not convinced that he can win this race without the lead. And Rock Your World figures out the lead. And Essential Quality, I mean, he's not... Essential Quality, to me, is not a very compelling horse. He's a really nice, consistent horse. But is he a great bet at a short price? I don't know. Then again, if he's 2-1 and Rock Your World is 4-1, I'd rather bet him at 2-1 than Rock Your World. And if he's 2-1 and then Charlie is 3-1 or 5-2, I'd probably rather bet him than that one also. So,
right.
You know, it's almost a decision sort of based on where you think the prices will be, or, you know, you get picks and then you can alter your opinion when the race is run and you see what the prices actually are, you know. But I don't really, you know, I don't see some interesting player out there. I mean, I don't think the other horses look even remotely competitive. Maybe I'm wrong, but I didn't see anything from any of them tonight. Did you?
I overtook because of pedigree, just curling out of the AP Indy mare. I was very intrigued by Rebel's Romance coming.
I agree. He was an interesting horse. I don't disagree, but not running, so it's a difference.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, I want to slip this in. You mentioned Commissioner. We should also note, for those, you know, that aren't intimately familiar with Todd's Belmonts, Dunkirk ran second in 2009.
Thank God he got second. Whew. That was a huge importance to me. He came back a second from Mind That Bird. I could hit that exacta. I mean, my favorite Todd Fletcher performance of all time. Did Dunkirk ever run again?
You know what? I do not think so. Now that you say that, I think that might have been his last race. I think you're right.
A really, really expensive horse.
He's
a gray. I remember it was a big, good-looking gray.
He also, and I know you're going to laugh at me, but he was also a lot of fun to be around. He was one of those horses you could play with.
Didn't he cost like $1.5 million or $2 million?
He might. You know what? I think you're right.
Real expensive horse, yeah.
And we had, you know, that Williams Lucky Gray, and she was a Dunkirk, and loved her.
He came back on the rail that Calvin Burrell said was dead. That was actually gold.
That was famously.
Mr. Rail Runner went wide on Mind That Bird on a gold rail, and then said the rail was dead. God, you're bringing back so many good memories.
Right, I'm great for that.
Great trip down memory lane.
Bluegrass Cat. Bluegrass Cat was
because of from a rider. I mean,
all your favorite themes. Bluegrass Cat was second for Todd in 2006. Yes, he was. The Wonderful Jazzle. And Stay Thirsty was second in 2011. Yep. And you want to talk about a harrowing one? What about Creator and Destin in 2016?
That was great memory for me. That was my birthday, and I bet Destin. He lost by the luckiest horse of all time. It never ran a competitive race again. That got if Joel had stayed down the inside, Destin wouldn't have won. If he hadn't gone inside, Creator wouldn't have gotten out, and Destin would have won. And then the next race, I bet a 6-1 shot. They won by a nose and got disqualified. That was a great birthday.
So now the pendulum has swung back the other way in this conversation.
Yeah. Destin was a killer, but he went on to a better career than Creator did.
Todd also ran third with Reddy's Echo and Sun River.
Sun River turned out. Was he a decent turf horse ultimately?
Yes, I think he did. I think he did go on to some nice turf exploits. Sun River. So Todd, when it comes to this race, you gotta clean your glasses.
I wouldn't even consider Known Agenda if it wasn't for how well Todd has done in this race. But
yeah.
I think you have to at least elevate your opinion a little bit
my opinion, that horse is so low, though, that I just can't do it enough. And I thought about it. I really thought about picking him. I considered it. I just can't.
I hear you.
Andy, run his best race, but I just don't know if he'll be good enough.
Beyond the weekend, I did save a couple of things from here. Let me pull this over. I wanted to ask your thoughts about a couple of performances that went on over the last week, and in particular, you know, we had the pick six carryover scenario is really got people going, and even though races came off the turf, it ended up being a very big return, 34,800 on Saturday, Sunday.
Wasn't the parlay for a dollar like 2,000 or something?
It's crazy. I mean, it was absolutely crazy.
Well, I'll tell you, a couple of things happened. First of all, you want to start talking exponentially. You rate in that situation because there's a zero. There was effectively close to a zero takeout,
right?
With the money bet, probably 2% takeout or something. With the permutations, probably get it close to almost doubling regardless. 80%. I didn't do the math. I'm not smart enough. And then you had a horse that was like 6-5 in the second leg first line that my guess was probably closer to 3-1 for the real money, the pick six. So you kind of had another double there. The third winner was kind of a putover horse, was close to the 16-1 or something in multis and paid 7-1, took a huge punch late. That horse was probably at least twice the price. So now you've sort of gone up, you know, three exponentials. So you've gone, you know, doubled it three times. So you've gone up eight times. So you've kind of already gotten the thing from 2,000 to 16,000. The fact you pay 34,000 in light of that is still kind of amazing. But I don't think it's surprising that it paid a big multiple. I just think it's a little surprising to pay the 17 times multiple. But there are reasonably explicable reasons why it paid a lot more. But it still paid really well. But keep in mind, no CAW play. And it shows. And it kind of shows what's available when you don't have that money in the pools.
No, exactly. You had the Paradise Creek come off the turf, and Barron runs off and wins big at even money. You had that Nightcap where you had the favorite, Cazilda 40 Tails, had to survive the inquiry with Tiny Magoo, and that was
less than right call, not taking it down.
Right. 2-1.
I actually saw Manny Franco wrote the second horse of the way out when we were talking about it, and he didn't. You know, I said to him, I wouldn't have been totally shocked if they took the winner down, but it just seemed like, and he said, you know, we're talking about, it seemed like the horse wasn't going by. I could have seen that horse coming down. She did come out and bang him, but it just seemed so late, and the race is kind of decided at that point.
Right.
That was one where Irad was doing everything he could to keep her off of Manny's horse. He was really hitting with a strong righty, and, you know, there was no earning by Irad whatsoever. He actually was aggressively trying to keep his horse off the other horse. She just was drifting.
Now,
I think you have to give him a little bit of slack. I think when you consider how much Irad was working to keep her straight and keep her off the other horse on a wet track, I thought the stewards were the right thing.
Now, between the intrigue and the, you know, just the fact that pick sixes, real pick sixes are back.
It's great to have it back. I mean, I would love to see the industry get together and just get rid of jackpot bets. And maybe try to follow a plan that we're using, because I think that there are issues that should be addressed in a positive way. And I think at least in that late pick five and the pick six, we're trying to address them in that manner, to give regular players a better chance. And it's hard. You know, it's hard with it. People like jackpot bets. I think they're insidious, and I think one of the worst things that's happened in racing in my lifetime. I don't want to say the worst, because there's probably other things that are negative as well, but I certainly put it up there as one of the worst, if not the worst, because it's insidious. And I think a lot of the players don't realize. And, you know, unfortunately, what the jackpot bets, the popularity of jackpot bets with a lot of players gives ammunition to racetrack executives that say, encounter the people that talk about takeout, people don't care about takeout. And the reality is that those jackpot bets have given them a real argument, real ammunition in that argument, because the popularity of those bets, from a handle standpoint, argues that a lot of money in the pools is not at all takeout sensitive.
Right.
And that doesn't mean the takeout should be raised, but by any stretch of the imagination. But I don't like the idea of giving that windfall. But also, I think it's created a bet that's very unfriendly to a lot of players, and they don't seem to be aware of it. But it's deleterious to their bankrolls. And there's so many opportunities to make bets that are so much better for your bankroll, per se. You know, a lower takeout pick five. But why do we have these bets out there? Who are they helping? And at the end of the day, some of those players say, well, the dollar pick six is too rich for me. I can't play it. Good. Play the pick five.
Yeah, pay the 50-cent low
better
takeout.
For you.
Yeah, exactly.
We sort of, you know, put the sign up to say, well, you don't drive down that road because, you know, it stops somewhere and you'll fall off a cliff. And the jackpot bets are basically creating opportunity for CAW players above and beyond the opportunities they already have. And I just think it's an unfortunate decision by track management. And I get it. You know, it's hard. You run a racetrack and all these people are telling you, why aren't you running, putting this bet in?
Right.
You know, so it's not, right. I understand why a lot of them do it, to be fair. I understood why we did it. People were haranguing us about it. I'm very proud that we changed back. I really am. You know, there's always internal debates about a lot of things, and hopefully all racetracks have a great deal of internal debate, and we certainly have about this one. And I'm really glad that we went back in the direction we did. And you can't argue that bet is much more friendly to players. You can't.
No. No doubt about it.
My rant of the day.
No, it's a good one, and you were way out ahead. I mean, the proliferation of the jackpot concept. You were sounding the alarm minutes into it.
I mean, listen, from a betting standpoint, the CAW issue is something that has to be discussed in racing, and to create a bet that even makes it better for them. It's like, you're kidding me, right? And.
Yeah.
I think in doing that, it shows a complete lack of foresight. And at very least, you'd like to think your decisions show foresight, or at least thoughtfulness. And I'm not sure that did or does.
Agreed.
We done?
Andy, we are done.
Seth
is going to join us, everyone's favorite, Seth Merrill.
Seth Klarman's coming on?
Seth Klarman, yes. Seth's going to read from.
You should have promoted that a little bit more.
He's going to read from this the upcoming Christmas letter.
You didn't even mention it. Christmas letter is hardly a Christmas letter. But anyway.
You know what I mean. And by the way, Noah and Merriam-Webster have shown up on Twitter to adjust your thinking about nouns. See,
cacophony is not a noun.
It is a noun. Cacophony.
No,
it isn't. It's a noun. It's a noun.
A cacophony of something. Wouldn't it be a cacophony of cacophonous?
Well, cacophonous, but just cacophony as a standalone.
Really?
All right. Cacophony.
I apologize.
That's all right. That's all right. It's a funny thing to have. It's a funny. I was taken aback because I was.
You're right. A hard mixture of sounds. I apologize.
And I think it was particularly apt. Just be thankful. Just be thankful you weren't on when it was happening.
I apologize. I was completely
not at all.
Learned something new today. I feel like I'm a better person as a result of this in a number of ways. So thank you for helping me. And I don't want to take any more assess time.
Andy,
that's what he does to his guests. You should ask who he likes in the race and then give your opinion first.
He's listening, and Seth's going to join. Seth can join us, and I'll let him address that. So great! Oh my God, Andy Serling, everybody, as only he can do. Makes me laugh like nobody. Seth Merrow is standing by, and Seth, I what can I say?
I didn't hear. I couldn't hear you. What did I get? Did I get shot?
Andy said, "Bring Seth on and do what he does. Ask an opinion and then say what his was."
I have had Andy on handicapping, and that's typically what I do when I have people handicapping. I say, who do you like in this race? And then I give out a couple. I give that as the foundation for the guests to build on. Andy doesn't like to build. He's got the house already built, so he doesn't want the foundation.
Exactly. Think of it this way. Think of it like Ed Sullivan or David Letterman or Kimmel or anybody that not John Kimmel, the other one,
Jimmy.
They bring out somebody. They bring out a singer or comedian. They let the singer or comedian perform, and then they have the conversation.
Next time I have him, I will go with that strategy.
Too funny. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I should have had. It's too bad. I thought maybe you were on the line already when he said it. That's it made me laugh because I know your style, obviously, and it's so typical that it's something that gets under that, you know, that Andy would be a bugaboo.
Some people need the foundation. Obviously, Andy doesn't. But now I'm in the mode of laying the foundation out, giving people something to build on. But Andy does not. Yeah, and I have realized that over the years. So I by now I should know when I have him. But I'm still. It's my style. It's my style.
Unbelievable.
Like his style. The Winter Cap the other day, he and Stabil. I was laughing when I was watching them on their pregame show the other day. I guess it was cold up here upstate.
Oh, it was cold.
Cold down there. Wearing the winter caps for their pregame show the other day.
Well, it at Belmont, it's cold in the summer. I mean, it'll be anywhere else. If it's not above 60 or so. Forget it here. I mean, this is just frigid. I mean, there's been, you know, you think back to those Breeders' Cups where there was one Breeders' Cup. Which one was it? Where bone chilling cold. It was so unpleasant. It took hours afterward to get comfortable again.
Are you at your usual location? Just
yes.
Outside the doors in the clubhouse?
Yes, where there has been there's been one bus crash after another of noise. It's been
unrelenting. And you mentioned water coming down. There's still water dripping because as
yes.
I've listened over the past half hour or so,
yes.
It sounds like you're cooking bacon.
You know what? Somebody else one time said that it sounds like the sizzling. There's those flower boxes in front of the row of boxes, and despite the fact that we had four straight days of rain, they felt obligated to water the boxes, and they do it every year, and I forget about it until it happens, and it goes on. It's like they set the hoses in the boxes, and they let the water just run for 45 minutes or an hour, and the water comes spilling out of the boxes. It's unbelievable, and it's like broadcasting from behind the wall at Niagara Falls, and it's like made of the mist.
You're wearing the flicker.
Yeah, the little hat. I look like the Gorton's fisherman.
Very good. Yeah, I could hear it dripping, though, so I was assuming there was... At first, I thought it was raining, but then you described...
That's what everybody thinks. I get texts, I get questions. Is it raining there? No, it just sounds like it's raining. It's, yeah, exactly. It's unbelievable. You made me think of something. Is there going to be a Capital OTB on-the-spot visit this week?
No, I just think she's over the past year and into this year with the whole pandemic thing and things being up in the air. We haven't made the track trips, so we didn't have anything planned for the Belmont. Given that it was fairly recently, things were still kind of up in the air. So no visit this year. I'll be live at the clubhouse. I have a bankroll promotion for 20 lucky patrons. I'll be playing during the afternoon to try to make them some money.
Nice. Well, certainly these cards, the way things came together and the moderating of the forecast should have people excited. And I'm not going to press you for too many opinions, but just some overriding thoughts leading in here.
Yeah, I haven't really done all the handicapping yet, but you were asking Andy, what's the best race other than the Belmont? I think the best race overall is the Phipps. I mean, you get Swiss Skydiver, Latruska, and She Dares the Devil. To me, that's just going to come down to three-sided coin flip type of a thing where I think you can make a case for each of those three. I think that's a great race. Bonnie Fell is another little player in there, but I think the big three are the ones that are going to attract attention. I'm really looking forward to that one. The Belmont... I'm probably going to tilt towards Essential Quality. I haven't decided yet. And I'm maybe a little against Rombauer. I'm maybe still taking a wait-and-see approach with him. I mean, the Preakness was good. Andy said it. Maybe the horse just turned the corner. And if that's true, he'll run big again. But I'm not sure. Essential Quality's interesting. Hot Rod Charlie, interesting. And you guys were talking earlier this morning about Known Agenda. I'll have him in the mix as well. But I look for Essential Quality to bounce back, I think, in here and kind of set himself up maybe for an interesting summer.
We'll watch for the OTB Seth Merrow one sheet and your analysis the next several days. And it's been a good Triple Crown season on that front for a lot of us. I want to slip in a couple of things, Seth, including conversation from earlier with Andy Beyer, which I don't know if you heard, and I'm going to ask you the question. We got about 5-6 minutes. I should note that word spreading that the split sample has come back positive on Medina Spirit, which is really no surprise, and it'll set off now a string of I imagine legal wranglings. So that the story's far from complete. I did want to mention two passings before they get any further afield. Last week, Seth, I didn't get a chance to pay tribute to Steve Dance, who had been at Fasig Tipton for his whole life, and died last week without warning, actually, and just synonymous with the auction scene and bid spotting and so forth, and just had a million friends. Really tough. They announced yesterday there's going to be a celebration of life at Timonium on the fairgrounds in the pavilion, and that'll come a week from Wednesday, June 16th, 1 o'clock at Timonium. And the family was suggesting for donations 4-H, Hartford or Baltimore County 4-H programs, which was close to Steve's heart. So I wanted to mention that. And Seth, one name also that you're going to know very well that I absolutely missed because of the Triple Crown season or being actually at Derby. I had not been aware that Daniel Conway passed away 3 weeks ago now.
I had not heard that either, but you're right. I want to say Dumbo. There was a horse that some folks in Amsterdam, where I grew up, this is going back years, owned, and he trained that one, and his assistant for a while was one of the Seiss brothers, who were a notable family in Amsterdam because their father was a judge in town, and he was an assistant for Conway for a while. So I'm certainly familiar with the name. Yeah.
Well, and you know, for years at Finger Lakes, and you know, would bring horses, you know, Saratoga, Aqueduct, and Belmont, 1,300 winners in his career, and I did not want it to go completely by the boards. Just a well-respected rank-and-file horseman. Daniel Conway. So I wanted to get that in. I had another note. Robert Hartman is becoming the head of the University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. This announcement coming yesterday, and we'll look forward to the symposium, and we'll look forward to meeting Hartman. He's been around. I don't know if he's been in directly in racing most recently, but he worked here at one time in New York, and worked out west as well. So we'll get a chance, I'm sure. But Robert Hartman, and also I've got to get probably next week, once the dust settles on Triple Crown season, want to get to the Godolphin Flying Start program. The Flying Start program announced its participants, and there's two from the U.S. that a lot of people know, and so we'll congratulate, and one of them is Jack Wolf's daughter, and another from the RTIP. So I want to get both of them on. They're going to have a chance to world travel, to globetrot as part of the Flying Start program. They kicked off at Arizona Downs yesterday, and I don't know if anybody took a look, but they had, you know, we talked last week to Mike Weiss. They've got nice, big, full fields, actually, these first couple of days of the meet.
That is an area of the country I'm familiar with because of racetracks in New Mexico. I was at
Sunland, Sunray?
No. My brother lived in town.
Downs at Albuquerque?
There you go, Albuquerque. I was forgetting Albuquerque, but yes, Downs at Albuquerque. Albuquerque Downs. Yeah.
You took a left turn at Albuquerque.
And <Babadoo-boom. laughs>
You got anything today? You handicap anything?
No, I had lined up Indiana Grand, but they're off the turf, and so I just, I'm not in today because I'm not doing TV today because I was in on the holiday, so with off the turf, I passed.
I hear you. And finally, we're going to be tough for time, but, you know, Andy Beyer, if you listen to the replay later, Andy says Triple Crown needs to be changed.
Yeah, I was a traditional guy for a long time, and I may be going in the other direction now. But I don't know whether it gets any harder or easier, even if you make the changes. And so, but as I say, I'm leaning maybe more in that direction myself. The 2 weeks is just, trainers don't like 2 weeks anymore.
No, it's gotten Andy made a good case. If anybody missed it, you'll hear the archive up in a little bit, podcast later as well, and the replay tomorrow. And Seth Barrow and I will be back for our 27th season of Loose on the Lead at Saratoga.
Looking forward to it. Can't wait.
Nice. Loose on the Lead, everybody. Started out as Keyword Saratoga. Some old-fashioned internet history. Keyword. That was my clever contribution. And Tina, actually. Good. Tina came up with Loose on the Lead, by the way. That was, we were driving out to Rochester. And I said, we need a name for the show. And she goes, well, you're Loose on the Lead. Baboon. That's like our name. Seth Merrow, everybody. Andy Serling, Sid Fernando, Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. Ron Anderson, if you missed Ron, you're going to want to listen. Andy Beyer, if you missed Andy, you're going to want to listen. Brad Cox, if you missed it, Brad earlier, you're going to want to listen. Just you want to listen. All this hoopla and frivolity. Talk to you tomorrow from Belmont Park, everybody. Thanks.
You have to go killing all the bees.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.